Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Rudzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Deborah Quazzo, managing partner of GSV Ventures, a venture capital fund that invests in the superstar entrepreneurs and companies in the $75 billion education, talent, and technology sector. She's also the co-founder and managing partner of the ASU GSV Summit, an international conference that brings thousands of innovators together each year. She's been named one of the top 100 seed investors in the world twice. Deborah, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
We're happy to have you here. And you started your career in banking, not in edtech investing. It was at a place we all know called Merrill Lynch. So can you talk about your path from the banking world to edtech? Was there a particular company or product that first caught your eye?
I had the opportunity to begin to work with some high growth companies in spaces like telemarketing and things like that. Amongst the sort of sectors that I began to focus on was the education sector. It was really early on, obviously. It was not a highly organized sector. You know, digitization was in its infancy, but I really kind of got hooked. It intrigued me that there was this difference being made by entrepreneurs and founders who were building businesses in the education sector. And so it was really my banking coverage and then recruiting my partner, Michael Moe, over to join me. I was a banker and he was a research analyst. And back in those days, bankers and research analysts were partners on building businesses. That's actually no longer even possible today, legally. But recruited Michael over, who had actually already begun to develop a very important sort of franchise and reputation, having written big research white papers like The Dawn of the Age of Knowledge and The Book of Knowledge, and then ultimately Knowledge Web, I think was what it was called, which was the advent of the internet and its impact on education. When he came over, we ended up building a much more concentrated focus in the sort of the pre-K to gray education technology sector that led us to spin out of Merrill Lynch and start our own company and then kind of go on from there.
So suffice it to say, you've seen some pretty wild, drastic changes in the field. EdTech is now worth tens of billions of dollars. We have more startups, more apps, more new technologies popping up all the time, which on one hand is really exciting for reasons we'll get into in a little bit. But on the other, it also means there's some pretty massive variation out there in terms of what's quality, what's effective, what works. So we're curious, as an investor, you know, as someone who's been immersed in this as much as anyone, what are some of the things you look for in high potential startups or high potential products?
In the early innings of EdTech, there was very little attention focused on accountability. And frankly, you know, pre-internet and pre, you know, a lot of the data systems, it was actually hard to measure efficacy, learning efficacy. But that has obviously gotten increasingly more straightforward, and with generative AI, even more so. But from the beginning, we had a framework which we called return on education. And we felt that companies with high returns on education would be equivalent to companies that would have high return on investment. And that return on education for us meant that an organization was increasing access to high quality education and or skills. It was providing leverage to the learning leader. It was lowering costs and creating higher outcomes or higher learning efficacy. And so there were sort of four prongs to that. They were obviously, in many cases, interrelated. But that was something we were always trying to push in terms of when we made investments or when we advised a company. We were always most impressed by the companies that were able to prove out their learning efficacy. And then, you know, beyond that, we sort of have an investment framework, which would called the 5 P's that we've been using for years as well. It's not rocket science, but still, I think it's incredibly useful. First P is people. There's no shortage of great ideas, but it is inevitably the quality and the talent and the authenticity, focus, mission of the people that get the job done. And even great people sometimes don't get the job done. So we understand that too, but you're still happy that you've partnered with some great people. Product being the second part, obviously, critically important. Is it new? Is it different? Is it, you know, great? What makes it such? Are you able to build a moat around the product? I think moats have been a big issue in the ed tech space. Potential, what's the addressable market? Can you expand the addressable market? We have a lot of companies in our portfolio that are actually seeing some really interesting opportunities to expand TAM. And then predictability, obviously, in the early days, predictability is very different than in later days when you have revenues and hopefully profits. But in the early days, that means you have a product roadmap. Are you driving predictably against that roadmap? Are you pivoting when you need to? And then having a kind of another line of sight on predictability, that sort of thing. And then the fifth P is purpose. We do believe that companies with purpose will inevitably have better outcomes. I think it keeps people focused, keeps people centered, keeps higher retention generally, and things like that. So that's the way we look at it. I think there has been variability. And I think the thing that all of us who are operated in education innovation or education technology within the education innovation space, you know, despite all the progress and good products out there, there's been so little progress in terms of student learning. I appreciate that COVID was a huge setback for us, but even without COVID, we were still not making the kind of progress that we need to make to serve particularly our most vulnerable students. And that's something that kind of eats at me every day, and I'm sure eats at you guys every day. And how do we drive this kind of transformation at scale? And we're all still here fighting that fight, and hope we can continue to make progress, not just in pockets, but actually holistically.
Well, let's look at some of that hope, because at GSV Ventures, you and your colleagues talk about bending the arc of human potential through the technologies in which you invest. It's that fifth P, purpose. And we love that phrase and that idea of bending the arc of human potential. So can you talk about some of the ways that you've seen EdTech live up to that mission and how EdTech can bend the arc of human potential?
Coursera is an investment of ours. And from the get-go, when Daphne Cole and Andrew, you know, Stanford professors founded the company, it was always just an incredibly elegant and different proposition in terms of learning and offering this incredibly rich opportunity to learn for free on the one hand, and then your ability to convert that into quite low cost certificates and things like that that you can apply for mobility in your job. And at the same time, off the same platform, you can go in and look for and achieve degree status in partnership with high brand universities that Coursera has partnered with all over the world. You know, in that case, I think people can be critical of completion rates of MOOCs and things like that. But the reality is MOOCs were crazy successful in that, and certainly Coursera's MOOC was, it still is, created a huge top of funnel in terms of global learners. I think today they have 150 million plus registered active learners on the Coursera platform, which is really quite stunning. And all over the world, people getting access to education in ways that they never could before. I laugh about the completion rates because I've taken a number of Coursera courses. I think I view myself as too old to complete something at this point. I would go in to get what I wanted and then move on.
You know, Deborah, I was one of those non-completers too. I remember when Coursera came out and I signed up for like 7 or 8 MOOCs at once because they all sounded so interesting. And I quickly learned that that was not the way to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't necessarily want to complete all of them, right? So anyway, I think that's been a very disruptive business model. I think another thing the MOOCs did, it broke a lot of ice around online learning in the higher ed community. You know, pre-MOOCs, we had to go in and sell the idea of online learning. Post-MOOCs, that conversation was completed and universities had sort of moved into, you know, a full-on understanding and embrace of what's going on. So I think that's a great example of a company that has, you know, incredible impact. We're also an investor in Guild Education, now called just Guild, founded by Rachel Romer. Company's doing incredibly well. But what Rachel did was take a really old concept, which was tuition reimbursement, tuition assistance, turn it on its head, you know, because tuition assistance and reimbursement was typically accessed only by, you know, sort of up-level, white-collar workers within a corporation, and frankly, not really highly utilized. It had never been applied really in any kind of scale to frontline workers who needed to get a high school equivalency, needed to get a college degree, needed to get a skills certificate or any or all of the above. And finding Walmart as their first customer with such an incredible commitment to workforce mobility and such a large frontline workforce. But since then, you know, the list of their customers is quite long and important. And that's transformational. And so we've had a theme for a while, enterprise as the fourth education system, because if enterprise doesn't become an active player in delivering education to their employees, we're in trouble, because the reality is they're inheriting employees who are coming from downstream systems, which in many cases have failed or at least delivered very mediocre results. That's our K-12 system, sometimes our higher ed system. And then they're facing also things like generative AI that are creating job obsolescence and the need to upskill and reskill existing employees. So it's pretty exciting to see the kinds of companies like JP Morgan, like Walmart, like Target, like Disney, and on and on and on, who have really embraced this concept of we're here to help create mobility for our employee base.
This is Greg Baer along with Ryan Rudzeski. We're talking with Deborah Quazzo, managing partner of GSV Ventures and co-founder of the annual ASU GSV Summit. Deborah, we want to talk about today's summit soon enough, but this all got started back, this summit did, in 2010. And it started small, 350 people in Scottsdale, Arizona. So tell us about that summit. Why on earth did you get involved in the conference planning business? And what is it that you were hoping would come from it?
My partner, Michael Moe, and I had founded a company called Think Equity Partners, which is a research-centric investment bank that covered really kind of all growth sectors from biotech to semiconductors to education. And we had always had a practice of having convenings, and that was more focused around investors and companies, public and private companies, but it also had quite a bit of thought leadership depending on the segment that we were talking about. That evolved into some conversations we had 15 years ago with folks at Arizona State University. Michael had been on an innovation committee down there with Michael Crow. Just coincidentally, he was not an alum or anything, and got into a conversation about why don't we try to put an event together. And so it started in a couple of conference rooms at ASU and then in Palo Alto. And in the first year, 2010, we had about 350 people, as we like to say, in sweaty conference rooms in Arizona State SkySong facility. And really was, even at that small beginning, a mix of people who didn't always sort of convene together, whether it's philanthropies and for-profit investors, social enterprises and commercial enterprises, K-12 leaders, higher ed leaders, workforce leaders. And so I think the magic of it from the get-go was EdTech and EdTech innovation and startups as sort of the energy that powered the whole thing. But we began to sense just how powerful it could be if you bring a lot of really smart people who care deeply, but had very different perspectives coming into the conversation, that if you were able to convene them, that they would actually end up bumping into each other and creating great outcomes. And I think that's been true over the years. We've obviously grown a lot from 350 to kind of the 7,000 that we had last year. And that affords a whole lot more bumping into people opportunity. I mean, the other thing I would say at the time in 2010, the ecosystem supporting EdTech was very weak. Our investment levels were very small. You know, there was sort of a cadre of folks, but we also felt that there was a need to provide some more support, a place people could get together, people could share views, people could share anxieties, people could share concerns. And we could also try to prompt additional investment, which was a big focus early on. As you guys pointed out at the front end, that investment certainly came through the pandemic. We've had a little setback here in the last year, but that was the intent, was to support the ecosystem. Then we saw the beauty of bringing all these different folks wearing different hats together. And then it just sort of began to kind of both organically and through our own curation grow into this much bigger set of communities.
Yeah, I mean, it has blown up in a big way. You're celebrating your 15th year. You know, you have thousands of attendees a year who come both virtually and in person. And you've also attracted some really high-profile guests over the years. You've had Presidents Bush and Obama. You had Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. You have had musicians like John Legend. These are huge names. And, you know, they aren't necessarily the first people we think of when we think of EdTech. So we're just curious, can you talk about what attracts such a diverse lineup of speakers and people to ASU GSV?
What we find is that, you know, whether it's George Bush or whether it's Bill Gates or whether it's Sheryl Sandberg or whether it's, you know, any of the other folks you've mentioned, there is a common thread that a huge portion of people care deeply about the equal delivery of high quality education and workforce skills to all people. People care deeply about mobility. Everybody had an education, so everybody's got an opinion on it, which is a good thing. And so it's actually a very common thread that runs through most people, that when you ask Jane Fonda to come, it resonates with people because they understand the importance to our democracy, the importance to the building of cities and countries in the world, and et cetera, of this sort of basic issue of the equal delivery of learning and skills at scale. You know, it's not always an easy sell, you know, because everybody's busy and has a little, you know, limited amount of time, but it is an easier sell in that it is a widely acknowledged place. People will have great substantive initiatives philanthropically in the education space.
And Deborah, you're doing something new at this year's summit. Can you tell us about the AIR show?
So, you know, we've been talking about AI and education for a number of years. We've always had substantive program. You know, our program's really large. We have about 180 panels and things. And then we've got our stage acts. That's where the Bill Gateses of the world speak. So it's a rich program. But in that rich program, we have been covering artificial intelligence for, gosh, at least 5 years. And this is actually our 14th year. It's our 15th event because we did it twice during COVID. So we'll be in technically our 15th year. So this year we decided that, you know, coming out of the 24 summit, which was sort of the first summit post the explosion of generative AI, we were fortunately able to pull together for 24 a pretty fantastic lineup of people to talk about that, whether it was Saul Khan or Ethan Mollick from Penn or other Bill Gates, obviously big opinion there. We were very fortunate that we had a pretty rich lineup. We decided this year to add a new event to the summit. We're calling it the ASU GSV AIR Show, and AIR stands for AI Revolution in Education. We're hosting it in parallel at the San Diego Conference Center. But the whole idea was to focus on what's happening with AI in education, its potential impact. Obviously, almost every company in the world that's focused on education is deploying AI in one form or another. Then there's separately a whole slew of AI startups focused on education. We also thought that the summit itself is not accessible to everyone because there's a finite space, and we do bring in hundreds, if not, you know, probably north of 1,000 people, educators in particular, K-12 and higher ed, in on scholarships and everything, but capacity is limited. So the AIR Show itself is free and open to the public, although people have to register. We also felt it was an interesting and potentially important thing to be able to make, you know, that part of the event, you know, highly accessible, whether that's for teachers or for faculty or for parents who are curious about AI products for their kids. And we have some special treats like Bill Nye, the science guy becomes the AI guy, and other folks like that are as part of the program.
That sounds great. And for our listeners, you know, if they're not yet sold, if Bill Nye wasn't enough, we should let our listeners know that Greg and I will be there too. So maybe that'll tip the scales.
Exactly.
Deborah, we're almost done, but we're going to try something. We've been trying this new thing here on the show called Remaking Tomorrow Lightning Round. So I'm just going to ask you a couple rapid-fire questions. You tell me the first thing that comes to mind, and then we'll wrap up. You ready?
Okay, absolutely.
All right. Favorite summit speaker of all time, aside from me and Greg?
Oh, gosh. I actually have to really think about that. I thought Wendy Kopp was fantastic last year when she took her Lifetime Achievement Award. She was so compelling. People like that are incredible. I thought Tulane Montgomery, when she won Innovator of Color, did just an extraordinary speech. I think it's people like that, but it is hard to pick one. I think there have been so many highlights.
How about the problem you'd most like education innovation to solve?
The scale delivery of efficacious learning. You'd love to see 100% of students in K-12 public education in the U.S., just for starters, proficient in math and reading versus less than 30% at this point, and way less than 30% for children of color and low-income children. I think the greatest hope I could possibly have is that we could find it unacceptable that our systems are delivering students at one-third or less success. There are not many industries in which it would be acceptable for the successful product to be delivered at a third. And that's kind of what we've settled for a long time.
How can people find out more about the work you're doing?
There are a lot on social, and we're posting, and certainly the events speak for us. I think that the program that we put together, is, you know, you can find it on their website, the ASU GSV website, as well as the AIR Show website.
Deborah, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
I mean, I think doing what they do naturally, which is care deeply for, you know, their children, their students, which I think, as I said, I think comes naturally. I think the one disconnect we have often in statistical polling across the country is that in aggregate, people may be dissatisfied with learning outcomes, but when it comes to their individual school, everything's great. And in many cases, it may be perfectly accurate that everything's great. But I think encouraging parents and teachers, you know, and grandparents, I'm a new grandparent, to all really question very hard whether the children are getting what they need. Are they learning what they need to be a member of our democracy? Are they learning what they need to be an effective, to be able to control their own destiny in the workforce, to have enough mobility that they can do, you know, whatever they need to do to be able to have a happy life? I think it's really pushing harder on accountability and making sure that what the tools teachers are being given, are they good enough? Are they delivering what they hope to be delivering? You know, and for parents, are they seeing the kind of progress with their children that they should be?
Thanks again to Deborah Quazzo, managing partner of GSV Ventures, co-founder of the annual ASU GSV Summit, and a new grandparent. Congratulations to Deborah and her family. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.